He also stands for loaning out his microphone once a week. This is Charlie Harper, GeorgiaPaul.com. Sully will be up next hour. He's got an interview with Senator David Perdue. I believe he's got Rick Limpert, all his Friday friends. And right now, we're going to try a caller again and see if this is how callers are supposed to be. But I believe we have Phil in Loganville on. Phil, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, I'm doing good, Charlie. I just want everyone to know that West Virginia, just a handful of days ago, passed open and concealed carry, unlicensed, unpermitted, no fingerprints, no criminal background check. You just carry it, concealed, everything is cool. That goes into effect in 90 days. They overrode a governor's veto of both houses. Both houses came together. They overrode it. 90 days, it's going to be law. That's a great contrast to what's going on in this state.
It definitely is a different approach, and it's West Virginia, which, you know, it's amazing to me that that was a bright blue state until Obama threatened to bankrupt the coal industry in, I believe it was San Francisco, and then said he didn't do it. And then he did it. So,
Charlie, that has happened in Maine, Kansas, Arkansas, and now West Virginia all this past year. It's just like a cascade of pro-Second Amendment activity. I wish that would reach Georgia because we need it.
Have you ever called into the Kimmer Show? Because you sound like one of those guys, Phil. You definitely have a radio voice. You probably should be the one in here with us. But anyway, Stefan, you want to any reply there before we move on to the final segment of qualifying presidential politics?
I expect people to begin flocking to West Virginia any minute.
Oh, come on. Y'all killed the state. Don't turn around and mock it after you kneecap their number one industry, man. Come on.
Hey, I didn't kneecap their number one industry.
My other mother, the lady that was my best friend's mom when I was in kindergarten and still is a great lady, Ida Mae Kincaid, is from West Virginia, and I don't let anyone talk bad about West Virginia people.
She still lives there?
Because you're insulting Miss Ida Mae. No, but she still goes back, I think, to visit family every once in a while, and I've driven through it once. It's absolutely beautiful.
I hope she's
also absolutely landlocked, and so I have no idea what you do to do economic development in Virginia if you're not pulling coal out of there, because it's all mountains and you just can't get there from anywhere. So, but it's a beautiful drive. If you ever want to rent a nice German car and drive down a freeway at 90 miles an hour and have to slow down for curbs because they're that tight, it's a great freeway that runs from, I believe, Lexington, Kentucky to Southern Virginia to get to D.C. Just throwing that out there for a travel tip. Let's get back in sweepstakes fashion, as our radio show is today, to talk about who else is qualifying. We talked about Isaacson's race. What are the more interesting ones you're seeing out there, John?
I mean, I'm seeing that there are a ton of people who are getting in and qualifying, and you look in general, and you have Republicans trying to take over what are normally considered to be Democratic seats, and Democrats who are trying to take over what are normally considered to be Republican seats. Take Sanford Bishop's District 2, which is kind of the southwest corner of Georgia. You've got three Republicans going up against Sanford Bishop, which is kind of interesting. District 3, of course, is an open seat, so you've got half a dozen people who've jumped in, including, I think, two more today who have come in to run there. We have a Republican from Chambly who is going over going for Hank Johnson's seat. We have another Republican from Atlanta somewhere going after John Lewis. Even Tom Price, who's a budget chairman, has both Republican and Democratic competition, so he'll be primaried and have to face something in general.
Let's talk specifically about some. I mean, right now, what interests me are the primaries. The general we'll have time to get to, and I think many of those. You've just got people that are either trying to put former candidate on the resume because a lot of those seats are not generally partisan competitive.
Like
before
Popeye.
We go into putting possibly Donald Trump on the general election ballot, which could literally change everything, and I mean that sincerely in terms of partisan realignment. That's a whole other show. We've got plenty of time to get to that if it happens. But in terms of the primaries, there are some really interesting ones out there because in the era of Donald Trump, where you know Trump's a third of the vote, is just willing to say it's not about principle. And the debate last night when Donald Trump was asked what kind of things he would be flexible on and what kind of things were hardcore principles, he said he was flexible on what he was flexible on. He actually said that. And I'm like, principles, people, you know, we they're principles, they're negotiable. I'm flexible. Anyway, my point is this. if the electorate is this angry that they're willing to shed everything they believe on, you almost have to take every primary challenge seriously, even as laughable as some of them are. Mm-hmm. And then my favorite one that I've spent a little bit of time on and will be spending a lot more time on next week is Congressman Paul Brown, the career politician that has run from three different districts in the state of Georgia now because he's qualified in the 9th district, which is a Gainesville-centered seat. He used to represent the Athens 10th district. He previously had run in a South Metro area, apparently the area I lived in, a 3rd district. I believe it had the number 3 on it. They changed the number 3 and 8 every time they redistrict down there. But he ran from that district in the 90s, and he's run for the U.S. Senate twice. So for a guy that hates Washington as much as Paul Brown does, he spends an awful lot of time trying to get there. And as I started a series of posts, because frankly, there's just too much information that you don't need to dump it all in one post. People need to understand that Paul Brown has been using, once he got to Washington, he used taxpayer funds to keep himself in Washington. And there's already been one guilty plea on that. What he's done outside of being in Washington is using the system to lend his name to what I generally refer to as scam PACs, which are the kind of political action committees that prey upon low-dollar donors, and all the money goes back into direct mail, i.e. the consultants that are running the PACs, to do that. We're going to talk about Congressman Brown coming back against Doug Collins, but you also have Tom Graves has a challenger from the right. Barry Loudermilk
has a couple of challengers,
a couple of them from the right or from, I don't even know if you call from the right there, but you've got one that's going to put some serious money in, and so that may be one of the more interesting primaries to watch. I know nothing about Mr. I believe it's Cowan that's running against Loudermilk, but Loudermilk and Heiss were the two that campaigned mostly on voting against Boehner, and I talked with Barry Loudermilk about what that meant because I was not comfortable supporting in a runoff someone that was going to go and just thwart the leadership for no apparent reason. And he voted against Boehner in the caucus because there was, despite the fact there was no other nominee, but once the caucus voted, he stayed with the party. And that's kind of how teamwork of politics works. But there are a lot of people in the 11th district, of which I'm a constituent of, that don't really like that explanation. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Cowan positions himself, because is he going to go to the right of Loudermilk, to the left of Loudermilk, or is he just going to generally oppose him? Which could be an interesting strategy, and I've seen nothing there. What about Jody Heiss? Did he end up with a primary challenger?
No, Jody is actually the one that appears to be clear. I think virtually Jody Heiss and David Scott, the Democrat, I think are the two that at this point have not been primaried or challenged.
So, you know, we've got the primaries, and then you've got the House district that the Democrats picked up in Brookhaven that has at least two primary challengers.
Right.
The long-expected race between Catherine Bernard and Megan Hansen, and that will be fun to watch, I'm sure, and I made fun in air quotes, and whether or not whoever wins that primary can unite,
you have
Bennett,
a third
has
Republican.
A good chance of staying. There is a third Republican.
Yeah, you have Alan Cole qualified today, so don't know much about Mr. Cole, but he apparently got in the race, so it's a three-way primary now there.
Stefan would like to go back to our caller in West Virginia and said we're going to start calling him Clean Coal. So, you know, if anyone needs a slogan, there's one for free, Mr. Cole. Whatevs. What races are interesting you that, you know, this is not the year that we have the statewide officers. So the only statewide, we have Public Service Commission because those aren't
right.
on the standard four-year terms. And then we have Johnny Isaacson's seat that we mentioned that he has Republican token Republican challengers that will still be taken seriously given the climate, and several Democrats, I think, qualified, but there's one
right.
that Barksdale is assumed to be the nominee based on the funds that are anticipated to be spent.
You're getting some challenges, I think, kind of based on transit and transportation. And
oh, that's right. We have the Brandon Beach challenger that apparently moved here 3 years ago, that immediately left and got back just in time to meet the residency requirement. And the first missive came out, as he said, Brandon Beach spends all of his time representing Cobb County, not North Fulton. Apparently, someone needs to tell this gentleman the district he qualified in is Cherokee and North Fulton, not Cobb. So know your districts, friends. It's pretty easy. But that could be an interesting race just because Brandon Beach has been very open on trying to solve transportation problems, both on House Bill 170 that brought road money that's going to be rebuilding the entire north end perimeter, among other areas in North Fulton, as well as trying GDOT is working on, I believe it's Highway 20 that runs through the middle of Cherokee and into North Fulton. That's kind of the main east-west corridor once you're north of 285. And he's also been a vocal person of trying to find a solution for MARTA. And that drew some local ire from some other elected officials in North Fulton. So, you know, he's been willing to lead. He's been willing to take a stand. And we're, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch to see how he does. But he's someone that, to me, has always said what he's going to do and does what he says. So now we're going to see if there's a penalty for trying to govern. Stephen.
I think there's this. People in Cherokee and North Fulton will be wise to understand that the difference between an SUV and a bus is just a matter of degree. The second point I would make is that this is a very interesting case.
Spoken about, like someone that doesn't understand the true issue is who's riding in them, Stephen.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, so interesting. Well, the challenger to Brandon Beach, I think, is very similar to the challenger against Mary Margaret Oliver, right? So you have Brandon Beach, who is trying to reach across the aisle or at least try and move the needle forward on transportation in a way that is reasonable. Mm-hmm. And Mary Margaret Oliver did the same thing on schools when she voted for OSD. And may not necessarily agree with her on that vote, but she's really trying to make a difference there. And she's picked up a challenger exclusively on that vote. And I don't think it's such a stretch to think that Brandon Beach has picked up a challenger exclusively on transportation. So it'd be interesting to see if these challenges succeed. And if they don't, it really should.
Or if someone recruited someone to run against him because he's rumored to be a candidate for lieutenant governor. Never assume that it's actually about the issues on the table, but it's how do you harness those issues into a bigger agenda sometimes. So there's that out there as well. Presidential politics, we literally have 30 seconds. Anyone, Stephen, y'all still confident it's going to be Hillary over there?
We're slightly less confident. But, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, Hillary's not a very good campaigner. So this was bound to happen.
And meanwhile, I don't know what's bound to happen on our side, John.
Well, I think you're starting to see and I tweeted something along this line earlier, but you're starting to see the new Donald Trump that is trying to replace the old Donald Trump. The old Donald Trump was angry and trying to attract potential voters to his side. The new Donald Trump is going to try to erase that memory and get general election voters to vote for him.
Some of us, however, personality Trump next week on Georgia Paul Radio on WGST. Hang with us. Sully's got Senator David Perdue, Rick Limpert, and others. We appreciate you hanging with us for another week. It's Georgia Paul Radio and WGST.